I'm Chris Benda, theological librarian at Vanderbilt University's Divinity Library, and I'd like to welcome you to Open Exchanges, a new series of conversations about recent Vanderbilt publications that have been made available as open access. In other words, versions of these publications are freely available on the internet for anyone to read. Today I'll be talking with Paul DeHart, professor of theology, about his recent article, Improvising the Paradigms, Aquinas, Creation, and the Eternal Ideas as Anti-Platonic Ontology. It's currently an early view article in the journal Modern Theology, and it will eventually end up in a particular issue of that journal. A copy of the article is available on Paul's webpage at the Vanderbilt Divinity School website. Paul, thanks for taking part in this conversation.
Not a problem. Thank you for inviting me.
Your article is concerned with what you see as a threat. Indeed, you liken it to a viral infection, to the classical understanding of creation ex nihilo. And your interest is in retrieving an understanding of Thomas Aquinas on creation that counters this threat. The title of the article is a bit intimidating, so with the understanding that the listener will need to get the full details from actually reading the article, I wonder if you could unpack a bit what you mean by Improvising the Paradigms, Aquinas' Creation and the Eternal Ideas as Anti-Platonic Ontology.
Okay. The Platonic tradition spoke of ideas as sort of the eternal paradigms of things that we see in the temporal world, the world of becoming. And these ideas existed on another plane, a higher plane, so to speak, where they were stable and immutable. And the world of becoming, the sort of sense world that we're a part of, consisted of sort of reflections, inferior reflections of these ideas. So if you encounter this tree or that tree, you're encountering a sort of deficient reflection that flows and passes away of the eternal tree, the idea of the tree, right? Well, Christian theology picked up on this idea fairly early and thought it was useful for talking about how God knew things about the created world. God classically was understood by Christian theologians to transcend time, to be the creator of time. And so things in the temporal world had to be known in a somewhat different way by God than we come to know them. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. When you achieve knowledge of something, that's an addition to you, so to speak. Mm. Something about your reality has been enriched, as it were, by that knowledge of that thing that's other than you are. The problem with the classical notion of God is that God's reality cannot possibly be enriched in any way. God is already the totality of all goodness and perfection. So how does God know the world without the world adding anything to God? Mm. Well, the simple answer is God just knows the world by creating it. Right, God knows the world because God makes the world. But this does create this issue of what is the knowledge God has of the created world, and how does it avoid changing God or enriching God's being? So this idea problematic entered into theology that way. What my article is about is looking at one way in which medieval and modern theologians took up that tradition in what I think to be a problematic way. That is, it was too Platonic. There's a way of thinking about this that says, well, God knows the things of this world because God already has an infinity of ideas about every deficient thing that could possibly participate in God's perfections. Every potential creature, just sort of a giant database, as it were. And I find that imagery troubling because it implies that part of God's life is having an infinity of worlds in God sort of explicitly. Mm. What this does is it makes this world, as well as an infinite number of other worlds, integral to God's being. Mm. I wanted a more creative notion, more like an artistic creative notion of how God creates the world and how ideas arise in God, one that's more tied to God's will and not just like a giant computer database. Mm-hmm. And so the idea then is God improvises the paradigms. That is, God creates the eternal ideas drawing on God's own being in the act of creating this particular world, mm-hmm. not by selecting, from an inventory. And Aquinas is very important for me because I think he has the best model for understanding how this might take place, although it's a controversial reading of Aquinas.
So what led you to write this particular article? And what scholarly concerns do you have that are expressed? I mean, you kind of gestured a little bit in this direction, but...
I can give a more specific genealogy of it. I mm-hmm. wrote a book a few years ago called Aquinas and Radical Orthodoxy, where I was engaging the thought of John Milbank and Catherine Pickstock. And one of the very interesting ideas that Catherine Pickstock had in her reading of Aquinas is that creatures actually are measured by their eternal idea. That is, God's idea of a creature is a kind of perfection, and therefore creatures can be closer to or more distant from their eternal idea based on how their life unfolds. Mm-hmm. I thought that this was not a sound reading of Aquinas, that in fact, because God's idea of a creature is God's knowledge of what God is going to create, then there's absolutely no distinction between the idea and what God creates. If there was a distinction, then God would have failed to create what God was thinking. Mm-hmm. So that started it. It started out as just a section of that book. Then I thought, okay, well, I started doing some reading in Aquinas, and I thought, oh, this is interesting, because there seems to be a... I found a dispute between one interpreter, James Ross, of Aquinas, and another couple of interpreters, Lawrence Dewan and John Whipple. And so I thought, ooh, let me wade into here and see if I can do it. So I wrote a long article that was published on Aquinas on divine ideas, particularly divine ideas of things that aren't created. Mm. Last summer, I thought I was done with it, and then I thought, no, there's just a little bit more, because I wanted to bring it into conversation with modern, sort of contemporary theological issues, and especially how early modern theology and theology in the period of German Romanticism and idealism picked up some of these ideas and ran with them in a way that I still think deforms some thinking today about the doctrine of creation. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, there's one more article here. So last summer I wrote and wrote and wrote, and I found I had three articles, one of which was this one. So that's how it sort of... But it was the specific is, I was applying to contemporary questions around the theology of creation this specific sort of medieval problem.
Mm-hmm. So. As I suggested already, folks will have to read the article for the details, and we're not going to get into the details, but there was one particular section of the article that actually comes towards the end that I wanted to ask you about. After you trace the consequences for Christian theology of this Platonist ontology that you were talking about, for understanding creation, and before you then offer your understanding of how Aquinas was able to avoid the ontology, you ask about, in a couple of paragraphs, which kind of have a rising cadence, I think, as you get to that long German word, yes. Which you may repeat if you wish, you ask about theology's role vis-a-vis the religious imagination. And just to quote a little bit of what you say, quote, "The living traffic with deity and worship and prayer can only take shape via a traditional stock of vital and indispensable images and ideas, but a second-order conceptual discipline is required to keep the embedded meanings and claims coherent with each other. Theology's role is to provide this discipline through some kind of transcendental reflection," unquote. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about this, but I'm particularly interested in why you decided to sort of insert this reflection on what you take theology to be in this particular article.
So, two questions.
Yeah.
Just commenting on the notion itself, I think that theology exists to serve religion. Mm-hmm. That is, if we understand religious life to be the life of prayer and worship and meditation and praise, we have a language that we use for these things. It's often inherited in a lot of ways, but it's also deeply personal. It touches the emotions. and sort of our existential concerns, so to speak. Theology does not exist to replace that, and I think that's a misunderstanding people have, is that theology exists to get rid of all that crudity and sort of get something conceptually precise in place. What I think is really happening in theology, and there's nothing original about this idea, mm-hmm. is that theology is a kind of second order, that is, it's not reflecting directly on faith, it's reflecting on the way we reflect on faith, or the way we use the language of faith, and try to be a kind of umpire to say, well, what can we take literally in what we say? What do we need to regard as symbolic or metaphorical in what we say? Where is it that our necessary emotional and personal investment in God interferes with what we think we know about God's transcendence? Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, what theology does, just generally speaking. It's a kind of umpire or referee to try to keep our language flowing, operative, but not frozen up and clotted, so to speak, because it's running afoul of our own. We don't want to be idolatrous in what we say. We want to be personal in engagement with deity, mm-hmm. but we don't want to be idolatrous. We don't want to drag God down to just another creature. Mm-hmm. So theology, mm-hmm. I think, exists mainly to keep that from happening. Mm-hmm. Why this appeared in this particular article is a good question. You rightly identified in your first question that the doctrine of creation is a concern that underlies the entire discussion. And in fact, it underlies all three of the articles, this and its two companion pieces, mm-hmm. as well as the Aquinas article from a couple of years ago. So I felt the need to actually say something about this, lest somebody say, why all this fuss? You know, reading my article and going through all these detailed, endless discussion of technicalities, what's the point of this? Why is this important? So I felt I wanted to stick a couple of paragraphs in there to say, listen, this issue about getting creation right is crucial to all theologizing, because it's where we get straight to ourselves. What is our best understanding of God's relation to the world? What are the ways in which we understand God to transcend any worldly being or thing? And therefore, what consequences follow when we're trying to be literal about what we're saying and meaning?
Mm-hmm. And you've sort of answered this last question, but do you have these three articles, and they're all sort of, the two of which aren't out yet, they're all sort of dealing with a similar thing. Do you see this as the end? I mean, have you, in terms of dealing with these particular topics, or...
Yeah.
The beginning or a middle?
Well, okay, so where did the three articles come from? Remember, I wrote that Aquinas article a while back. These three articles that came from last summer each touch on something different about the Platonic idea tradition. Mm-hmm. One was the Platonic ideas give us a kind of ethical vision, and so in one article I'm dealing with that. Like, how do we retrieve an ethical vision of God's knowledge? That is, how does that affect us and our choices? Mm-hmm. But without falling into Platonism. Mm-hmm. Then there was one on epistemology, like how do we know things about God, for example, or the world, with this old model. This, the one we're talking about, was about ontology, mm-hmm. that is, about being itself. Like, so the three fit together. They're mm-hmm. companion pieces. Mm-hmm. I do think they are finished in the sense that I'm not, the projects I'm working on now are no longer directly dealing with the idea tradition. Mm-hmm. Let me say what I hope is going to happen in two different ways.
Sure.
In terms of my scholarship, it's my hope that these articles, for me at least, have made clear what I regard are some fundamental decisions that are going to guide my thinking as I do work on, say, the doctrine of the Trinity, which is which I'm going to be working on starting on my sabbatical. Mm. So I regard this as kind of foundational thinking for me theologically about how we should go about talking about God and the world whenever we're dealing with any kind of doctrine. Mm-hmm. Practically, or maybe better, publication-wise, it is my hope to, in the next maybe 3 to 4 years, to produce a collection of essays of mostly previously published articles that I think fit together as a sort of complete enterprise of stuff I've published over the last 15 years or so, And these three articles, this one that we're discussing, its two companion pieces, plus the Aquinas one, will all form one section of that book because they all sort of fit together thematically.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Paul, for this conversation. Again, the article is Improvising the Paradigms, Aquinas, Creation, and the Eternal Ideas as Anti-Platonic Ontology. The author is Paul DeHart, professor of theology here at Vanderbilt. And for an open access copy of the preprint of the article, as well as a link to the published version, browse to divinity.vanderbilt.edu and look for Paul DeHart under the faculty staff link. Let us know what you think about the article and this conversation, and thanks for listening.